The next is we're going to have a discussion about iatrogenic nerve injuries of the upper extremity, and for that, Dr. Jonathan Isaacs is going to give us a good discussion on it. Dr. Isaacs?
Charlie, Scott, thank you for including me on this panel. I think we're going to see a little redundancy in the talk, so I'll try to maybe skim over a couple things. I think like the neck, the arm, if you're going to talk about iatrogenic nerve injuries, is what we might call a target-rich environment. And to maybe try to add some things to what's already been said, there certainly are some nerves that are more vulnerable than others. As a orthopedic surgeon, the suprascapular and axillary nerve, I could tell you, are particularly vulnerable due to their anatomic course around the glenoid. And then, as we already heard, another anatomic variation that makes some nerves vulnerable is maybe lack of padding. And for the upper extremity, in particular, the ulnar nerve seems to be very vulnerable. We know that these types of injuries can present in a big spectrum, increased postoperative pain, sensory disturbance, weakness, though sometimes weakness is difficult to differentiate from pain, paralysis, and as you've already heard, some patients have complete disability. Charlie already talked some about this. The reason why we see this spectrum of presentations is because the nerves get injured along a spectrum as well. But the simplest injury in which the nerve architecture is preserved is what we call a neuropraxic injury. You cannot differentiate that when you look at the patient clinically from the next worst injury, the axonotomedic injury that you just heard about a few minutes ago. And you can't differentiate that from the next worst injury, which is internal rupture of the nerve. And then you continue up the scale with the worst injuries being where the nerve is transected or pulled apart. Variety of injury mechanisms, as elsewhere in the body, we see it in the upper extremity positioning, the ulnar nerve. Some level of dysfunction reported as much as 1 in 300, tourniquet-induced palsies, 1 in 7,000, and while we can't give you an incidence, we know, and you've already heard, that hematomas and other expanding fluid collections can cause problems. Traction injuries can occur from positioning. Here's a good example, an axilla procedure. The arm is held in an abducted posture. We get the resins to pull on the arm. We know, especially if the head's turned in the opposite direction, especially if the patient's given muscle relaxants, so they even lose the protective tone of normal muscle, that the plexus can be stretched and damaged. Thoracotomy, particularly the lower plexus, some level of dysfunction reported up to 1 in 20 of these cases, though they can be devastating. That picture is one of my patients, which you could see, has had a significant nerve injury. Retractors can cause compression, pinching the nerve between the retractor and underlying bone, or the traction injury that we've already heard some about. I will tell you, this isn't from the literature, but my own observation, and this makes sense if you think about it, that this seems a little bit more common with vascular type procedures, where I get it that exposure is very important. Transection, accidental transection during surgical approaches, I think everybody here has cut a sensory nerve on the way in. I mean, it's very easy to do. Luckily, usually it's not a big deal, though sometimes it can be. Misidentified structures, we've heard a little bit about this already, and I've seen it too. We cut and ligated a vessel and it turned out to be a nerve. Taking a piece of nerve out with a benign tumor such as lipoma, certainly we've seen that as well. And then we've already talked a little bit about schwannomas and neurofibromas. What really should, in many cases, be nerve tumors that are removed with minimal or no morbidity, resulting in a nerve resection with a significant morbidity associated with that. Bovi, just getting too close, and you think about how hot the liquid gets inside the wound when boving, and certainly touching a nerve with your forceps as somebody else applies the cautery to it. Injection injuries, we're not causing injection injuries, but you're seeing the patient post-op. You have to sort through the story and figure out where and when the nerve got hurt. You need to know about injection injuries. During regional anesthesia, there's some level of neurotoxicity to the local anesthetic, though typically not at the concentrations that are used during the procedures, though. We have seen people that we think it's a Their nerve injury is a result of neurotoxicity, but certainly pressure damage, particularly with intraneural injections if those occur, but they can happen from an injection in the correct place where the fluid puts pressure on the nerve and damages it, or subsequent fibrosis can be a problem as well. The Parsons Turner we just heard about, the only thing I'll add to Eric's description is that they often have what we call a non-anatomic distribution of their atrophy and weakness, meaning that one muscle from the ulnar nerve and one muscle from the radial nerve are affected, and you're looking at the patient going, well, this doesn't make any sense. And it makes sense in the terms of Parsonage-Turner syndrome, though certainly single nerves, particularly the AIN or the long thoracic, can be affected, and it can be bilateral as well. The last thing I want to mention is that if you have a patient after surgery that seems to have some sort of nerve defect, don't forget about the dressings, that it could be too tight. You could have one of the joints in an extreme position that we know puts pressure on the nerve, and those are certainly easy things to correct if you recognize them. So how do we avoid iatrogenic injuries? And well, the obvious answer is that we're aware that they occur, we think about them, we talk about them just like we're doing right now. Think about cushioning the ulnar nerve. Think about minimizing your tourniquet time and minimizing the tourniquet pressure as much as you can. Don't do procedures you're not familiar with. I'll pick on orthopedic surgeons since I am one. That's a endoscopic carpal tunnel release by a sports surgeon. That median nerve's cut in a couple places. That guy had no business doing the surgery. Stick with procedures that you're familiar with. If you're not used to taking out nerve tumors, don't do it. Let somebody who knows how to do it or is more familiar with doing it do it. I'll put in a little pitch for nerve stimulators, that if you're in an area and you know there's a nerve there and you can't find it, the liberal use of nerve stimulators, I think, can be very helpful as well. And then, as I mentioned, address the problems that are easily correctable when you see them. Recognizing nerve injuries can sometimes actually be challenging. It may be just increased postoperative pain, but that's sometimes hard to pick out from normal postoperative pain, especially if the patient has a block. Look for temporal patterns if you're trying to make a case for one nerve injury versus another. As Eric already mentioned, though this is not infallible, we certainly know that patients who've been damaged during the regional block don't necessarily tell you, oh yeah, I felt a sharp pain down my arm during the block, and immediately after surgery it was terrible. It can still be very confusing. And then most important, and you've heard this from several of us, don't go into denial. We know that delayed treatment results in poor results, and we know that many of these don't get better on their own. So a treatment of reassurance for month after month can, in many cases, be a recipe for disaster. The shoulder literature has a recently published article, 60% of iatrogenic nerve injuries around the shoulder did not resolve on their own, and upon exploration, a third of them were cut or had a suture around them. During the physical exam, again, think about those anatomic patterns. Try to get some objective data. Try to do sharp, dull discrimination. Don't just give a vague statement about sensory changes. I'm going to say don't get a nerve study in an EMG immediately at their post-op visit. The nerve takes about a week to really change and reflect the level of damage that's been done to it. The EMG can take about 3 weeks to change. So if you see them at their post-op visit, a week and a half out, you're worried, you get these tests on them right away, they're expensive, they hurt, and they don't give the patient, they don't give you really the information that you need to kind of make the next set of decisions. I'll throw in there, I'm not a big fan of imaging studies immediately after surgery. There's often a lot of post-operative changes that really limit your ability to gain any meaningful information from expensive studies. And treatment depends on the degree of injury, which nerves involved, the level of injury, the timing of the presentation. As we already heard, these neuropraxic injuries, the least bad injury, will spontaneously recover. This is the one where reassurance turns out to be the right answer, but you just have to be able to figure out which of those patients have the neuropraxic injuries, which of the patients have the axonotomedic injuries, meaning that if you wait that out, that also is going to recover, right? Remember that nerves regenerate at an inch a month. And if it's a axonotomedic injury, the injury where only the axon's disrupted, but the rest of the architecture of the nerve is preserved, this person is going to also recover if you wait it out long enough. But the prediction of when that time is going to come is a lot more difficult. And of course, it has to do with how far you are from a target. But any injury worse than that, including the nerve injuries where they're still intact, but just have disruption of the internal architecture need to be fixed if you're going to have any chance of recovery. So how do we decide? How do we figure out what's neuropraxic, what's axonotomic, what do we have to explore? And part of the answer certainly is nerve conduction studies, EMGs. Imaging, I think, does have its role. But some of it is just waiting and seeing if the neuropraxic injury is going to get better, give the axonotomic injury some time to regenerate. But we can't wait forever. We know that there's a window of opportunity. Scott mentioned that with time, we know the muscle undergoes changes, that it's no longer able to regain meaningful function. The nerve also, we don't talk about it as much, but we know the nerve also undergoes changes with time and loses the ability to support nerve regeneration. We talk about this rule of 18, that you have to have reinnervation of the muscle by 18 months, but probably a better way to think about it is that the sooner you do it, the better your chance of a result, of a good result. The longer you wait, the worse your chance, and eventually you hit a point where there's no hope of recovery. So to kind of walk this balance, the trick is to wait long enough that the neuropraxics are identified, but that interoperatively, if the nerve is still intact, you're able to differentiate whether it's an axonotomic injury, the injury that's going to recover, or an injury that needs to be resected and reconstructed. And the way we do that typically is with interoperative nerve studies. Once you make the decision that you're going to explore a patient, you could see up there's a ton of options of what we can do. Neurolysis, yes, often there's fibrosis around the nerve. Taking it off helps the nerve function better. But lots of times, neurolysis is just our way of saying we're exposing the nerve to look at it to see whether or not it has a full injury or not. Exposure, as in days of a cleanly cut nerve, you can do a primary repair. Sometimes the appeal of a primary repair is that they really do a lot better. As you see, you can get it sutured together. That's the best chance of getting a good result. But again, as you already heard, you can't do this at the cost of tension. If you get in there and the nerve's intact, it's not functioning the way that we tell. Again, if you've given it time to start regenerating, so if you waited 4 months, if you waited 5 months, that should be 4 to 5 inches of axon regeneration into or across the zone of injury. And so by waiting around 4 or 5 months before you explore, when you don't know that it's cut, there is some a rationale behind that, that it allows us interoperatively, if the nerve's still intact, to be able to figure out what to do next. Damaged nerves that are clearly cut, you still often have to resect the ends of the nerves. Again, if it's an intact nerve with a zone of injury without axon regeneration, you have to cut it out. Can be fixed with allograft, can be fixed with sural nerve. Again, as Eric mentioned, these can be cabled together. Nerve transfer is kind of the new shift in our paradigm, where we're looking at a lot of scenarios where this turns out to probably be the better option. The basic concept is we identify a distal nerve that we don't mind sacrificing, and we transfer that nerve to the nerve that we want to regain the function in. And it works well in a lot of cases because you get a lot closer to your target, so you decrease the regeneration time for the axons, you get a better, more direct shot. Up on the screen, you could see an example that's an anterior osseous nerve transfer to the motor component of the ulnar nerve. Proximal ulnar nerve repairs do terrible. This does reasonably well, and it's a little bit of a game changer. In general, talking about nerve injuries, we know that the outcomes are related to a lot of things we don't have any control over. Patient age, timing. Now, as I said, you can control the timing, and sometimes we want to wait a little bit before we explore a nerve, but often we don't have any say in when the patient shows up at our office. Just looking at median ulnar nerve repairs in the upper extremities, so these are repairs, but about half of them get a good outcome. You've seen a little bit of this already, that if we talk about iatrogenic nerve injuries, again, positioning injuries do have the better prognosis with close to a 90% recovery rate. But in a couple of large series studies looking at nerve injuries, About a third of them are found in discontinuity, so require some sort of reconstruction. And especially if you do earlier exploration and treatment, i.e. less than 6 months, you can get satisfactory recovery in about 75% of them. So to leave you with some final thoughts, many iatrogenic injuries, I think everybody appreciates, can be avoided, but prompt recognition and treatment really improves the chance of a favorable recovery. Many of these will not get better on their own, and the more timely treatment, the better our chance of success. And thank you.